Addressing violence in the schools. How do we best keep our students safe? All over the country today, students mark the one-month anniversary of the Parkland school shooting by walking out of school for 17 minutes, 1 minute for each of the students killed. Here in Maine, most schools have a snow day, and many students plan to walk out tomorrow instead. As students rally to make their voices heard, others, including administrators, teachers, school board members, and police officers, have been meeting and discussing the best way to protect students in the future. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss school safety. What do we need to do? Install metal detectors in schools? Arm teachers? Ban assault rifles? Practice lockdown drills? Focus more on helping troubled kids? Big questions. Maine Calling is next. But first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today is the day that students across the country are staging walkouts to protest gun violence in the wake of the Parkland shootings. Many of the walkouts may be snowed out, but the topic of security in Maine schools is receiving intense scrutiny these days. We'll learn what kind of safety measures schools have in place and what they are looking to add in this climate of extra vigilance. Joining me in our studio, Grace Levitt. She is vice president of the Maine Education Association and a Spanish teacher at Greeley High School. Katie Grondin is superintendent of schools for the Auburn School Department. And Al Giusto is school resource officer with the South Portland Police Department, and he is based at South Portland High School. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have kids in school, and are you concerned about how secure their school is? And if you're a student listening in today during your snow day, what do you think about safety at school? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. I want to start the show by asking all of you, what your reaction, other than obviously being horrified when you heard about the Parkland shooting a month ago, but as a superintendent, as a teacher, as a police officer, what did you think next? And what have you been thinking in the month since? I'll start with you, Katie.
So obviously, tragedy, a lot of emotion, tears about that could happen. And our first step, obviously, was to make sure we were reviewing our requirements, our expectations of what we require with lockdown drills, our evacuation drills, making sure we were doing what we have been putting out as our plans with our students. So it always makes you stop and think, you know, what was different this time? We're fortunate to work with Scott Parker, who is a safety consultant for our district, and he was very right out the gate saying, you know, we'll be updating on new information to check and adjust our plans. We're always checking, adjusting every time something happens that our students are, you know, safety and our staff as
well.
Have
you done more in the last month? Have you done, for example, more lockdown drills than you did before?
Well, those schools that had not performed their lockdown this year, yes. And for some, we did it because it was so close to the Parkland. We wanted to be sensitive. So making an announced one, especially at the high school, announcing this is when it will be taking place. This is how, and having teachers review everything so that when they did the next drill, it wouldn't, you know, because it was so close to the Parkland, we didn't want to be insensitive to students and staff being emotional.
What about you, Grace, afterwards?
Yeah, it was, I mean, there's no other word for it than horrified. And just feeling an increased sense of concern for students, how they would be reacting to this, as well as for colleagues, for the staff, and knowing that people were on edge and just deeply, deeply saddened and wondering what would happen next. We've had a lot of conversations with school administration, looking at how to go forward from here, how to address students' concerns, but really just a heightened, an increased sense of watching our students and being sure that they're okay, as well as looking out for our colleagues.
Do you feel as though the atmosphere in the classroom has changed?
Once I get into a lesson, I don't think it has. You sort of can block out the rest of the world when you're really focusing on something like the subjunctive. But it has, definitely, that the students are really have a lot of concerns about this and are certainly speaking up about it.
What about you, Al?
It was a little closer to home. A friend that I went to high school with, his daughter's boyfriend was one of the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a day, they posted his picture saying, "Have you seen him?" And you know that there were people not identified yet. So I knew he was probably one of the victims. And then the next morning came that he was identified. And so that was kind of just sad. Makes you think about that, what they're going through, what other people were going through. And then I called my lieutenant in the morning, just talking about other safety issues. And then about 20 minutes later, I had to then go into, we had a terror threat at the actual school, and everything worked out great with communication between school, other officers, and the command staff, and we handled that well. But it was so close, and kids were very worried because it was just a day before. It literally was the day before, now the next morning. Mm. And we have kids, being scared of a threat happening. So they were more heightened, I think, than if it was 2 months ago.
When you had the threat at the South Portland High School, did you have a procedure in place to deal with that? And did you follow that procedure? And how did it go? How did it all work out?
There's a procedure do we go into a lockdown or do we not go into a lockdown yet? Is the threat in the school or is it outside the school? So it was determined quickly that the student wasn't in the school, so we didn't need to go into a lockdown. Our doors are always locked, so we have a locked out policy. As soon as the bell rings, we're in a lockout mode. We don't have a free campus, open campus. So kids were secure. Everybody was secured at that point. And then we were trying to figure out the credibility of the threat and where would the student be at the time.
Are the exterior doors locked or interior doors as well during classroom time?
All exterior doors.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And is that the same in Auburn?
No, all of our doors are locked during the school day. So if a teacher has, and that was something we double checked on, making sure that we were following best practice around whether the doors are locked or not. And because there's different viewpoints around fire, non-fire. So we do have our doors locked. Teacher may have a door open, but it's to be locked. And so our maintenance crew went around where there were doors in question and fixed locks to make sure everybody had that ability. And if not, what was their plan B? And also our exterior doors were, again, checked to make sure for safety, where there are loose doors that people could get through. We need to make sure we had those replaced. We had a couple replaced over February vacation. So we were looking at all those and checking in with the police department around the locked door, non-locked door.
Mm. I want to go now to Alona Bodwell. She's joining us from Kennebunk. She's one of the student walkout organizers at Kennebunk High School and a sophomore. Thanks for calling in, Alona.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Alona, I want to ask, I understand Kennebunk High School, like so many high schools in Maine, is going to have their walkout tomorrow instead of today, correct?
Yes, just because, school is canceled, so we can't really do much about it.
Right, but I want to ask, what are you hoping the message that your walkout at Kennebunk High School and the students around the country is? What do you want the rest of the country to take away?
I think from what I've discussed with my peers is that at its forefront, it is a memorial of students and teachers who have lost their lives and so many other victims of gun violence. And from that, we really hope that positive discussion occurs immediately after, as soon as we can make it occur, and just to have legislators and Congress people hear us, just because we are so young, so we don't really get to have that voice, but we want them to hear us, and we want the walkout to be a immediate occurrence of change.
Alona, I want to ask you, I understand Kennebunk School District is one that has regular lockdown or lockout drills. Have you participated in those?
Yeah, they've happened, for as long as I can remember, really, just because this has school shootings and mass shootings have been going on for such a long time. We've all grown up with that and thought in the back of our minds. So we've just been doing them for as long as I can remember.
Do you feel safe at school?
Yeah, I haven't felt safe at school for a very long time, which is just terrifying because I really do love school and I love learning and I love being with people who have similar interests. But like anywhere on school grounds, it's pretty scary, you know, no matter what you really do. And like thinking about that no school shooting has been like completely stopped by a on-site security officer is also a really terrifying thought. Just thinking like the powerlessness that we do have. So that's a big point of what we're trying to change is the gun laws.
Well, Alona, thanks so much for calling in today. That's Alona Bodwell. She's a sophomore at Kennebunk High School. I did mention with Alona that Kennebunk is one of the school districts I'm aware that has regular lockout drills, but that's not the case in every district in Maine, is it? I mean, there is a great variety, isn't there, Grace, between what school districts do?
No, we all have drills of various kinds, fire drills, evacuation drills, lockdown drills as well. Probably Katie can speak to the specifics of the laws on that, but we routinely have those drills every year.
Okay, so what are the laws? Are there state laws about what schools need to be doing?
Yes, by state law, there are 8 drills that are required in the elementary K-8, and there are 10 drills required for high school. Or do I have the reverse?
Reverse.
It's reverse, thank you. It's reverse. You're right. 10 elementary, 8 secondary. And in 2015, lockdown drill was added to the requirement. And so some schools have started with their staff because it's, you know, you need to start with the staff on how you're going to run a lockdown drill. I mean, there's a lot to it, the attendance, the where they're going to be, you know, it's being quiet, out of sight, those type of things. So you want to review that with your staff and then work with the students on it. So it is part of state law. In Auburn, we've been doing a lot of work on reunification because that, you know, once something happens, whether it's a fire or something that you need to remove the students and reunify them with their family comes with a lot of work. And so our district has been practicing reunification drills as well.
Okay. I want to talk with some of the solutions that are being offered out there, and the sort of most controversial one, I'm sure, Grace, is arming teachers and allowing teachers who want to carry firearms to do so. The MEA has taken a stand on this, correct?
Yes, and it just does not make any sense to have weapons on a school campus, with the exception of law enforcement that are trained and that's their job. We're focused on teaching and we're focused on students, and that we need to keep that focus on that. We can't have it's more than a distraction of having any kind of weaponry as well. It just doesn't make sense.
Do you know any teachers who feel differently, who say, you know, I'm a good shot and I would feel safer if I had a gun with me?
I have not met any to date. I know that there are some states where that's already happening. And it's, you know, I can't speak for them. I'm just speaking for the colleagues that I have spoken with and for MEA leadership, and that this is just not a place we want to be going.
Well, let me talk about some other solutions. And Al, I know that in many school districts around the country, for at least a generation now, things like metal detectors are just part of the school day. Is that something that Maine schools need to be thinking about?
I don't think so. I don't think our schools should turn into prisons or jails. It's not going to necessarily stop a shooter. I mean, if you look at the history of what's happening, especially with Parkland, or the people who were just stopped that were trying to do something in the last couple of years, they're planning. They're looking. So it all changed pretty much. The history of school shootings it's more vast than you think. There have been violence since the mid-1800s, 1900s. You'll see school shootings, and as it increases, but it's usually like was one person against another, a kid against a teacher, parent against a teacher. And as we start getting into the 60s, it starts going more student against a student. And then Columbine, there was the one in the college in Texas, but in Columbine is where it changes. Now you're looking at more military tactics to create numbers. And every school shooter will research Columbine and every other one. So if there's metal detectors, they'll do something else. just like happened in Parkland. Pull the fire
and
alarm.
What's interesting is that obviously was the first thing I heard from a school board member. Well, are we going to get metal detectors and so forth? So when I was meeting with the students that were planning the March 14th walkout, I asked them, I said, what would you feel about metal detectors? And they said that would make me feel more unsafe. Then I'd be walking through thinking, that would not create safety for me. And so I thought that was an interesting perspective. I don't think we should jump to what we perceive to be a quick fix, but really looking at research and what is in best practice to keep students safe, because it's really around relationships and knowing our students, being vigilant, making those connections, and also putting in place things that we need to put in place to keep students safe. And I'm not sure metal detectors is the answer, because if you look at, as you say, how these have occurred, I said to my school board member, I don't mean to scare you, but kids go out to recess every day.
Okay? That's true.
Kids are on the playground. Kids are getting on buses. If there's a will, there's a way, and that's scary. And I tell our staff, and we do our best to prepare for something we hope never happens. And we're going to use our best judgment and work as a team to protect our kids. And that's what we have to have a mindset on.
Does this feel overwhelming as educators, though? I mean, you all didn't go to school. You went to school to help children learn.
Correct.
True. But I think Katie's hit on a real key thing there, and that is about the relationships that educators have with the students. The teachers are really getting to know their students. Goes to having also the services in the school that are needed for students, whether it's enough guidance counselors and enough social workers. Lots of districts have those services, and many, unfortunately, do not. And
to
be able to help students with whatever they need. Right. We need to do that for them to learn. We need to do that to keep them safe.
Well, and that's obviously one of the big discussions coming out of the Parkland shooting, is that this young man was obviously very troubled, mm-hmm. and did not get, obviously, the services he needed and the community needed.
We don't know yet. We don't. I mean, speaking as a police officer who takes people to the hospital routinely, and as the department does that, and we bring people to Maine Med, usually they're released. Unless there's something major going on, most people are looked at and a plan comes in place. You can't predict, psychologists can't predict people's behavior. So we can't predict that they're the next school shooter. They could have signs, but we can't put people in unless there's an egregious act that happened or other things. Are they a danger to themselves or others? Then you could start putting people into
This happens. So what needs to change? Do we just throw up our hands and say everybody's doing the best they can and we're just going to accept that this happens from time to time?
It would be once Parkland comes out, it'd be interesting to see if the ball was dropped in any way with police or medical staff not making the proper reports, not following through, or did it go through its steps? So the mental health aspect is one of it that we have to look at how do we tighten up that part? But it's pretty difficult. Someone has a mental illness. You can't just put them in an institution.
I mean, you don't throw your hands up. You're always looking for resources, training. Our school department this year did a lot with trauma-informed schools, really understanding. When I've met with students who might have been in altercation, and you really talk about their stories and understanding their stories. And, 60 Minutes did their big show on Sunday around the ACEs, the adverse child effect, and the impact on our students. And you meet these students, and one student, I remember sitting across, had fought with another student, and you could see the tears in her eyes. Mm-hmm. She was in pain. There was pain there. And we have to address the pain that many of our students struggle with childhood.
Do we have the resources in Maine to deal with this properly? And there are a lot of kids out there. There are a lot of kids who are hungry. There are now a lot of kids whose parents are addicted to opioids, who are living in single-family homes with not a lot of money.
I don't think we have them yet, but I think we have to keep trying to provide them. And certainly it goes to having the the economic resources as well as having the trained personnel that are being hired, and certainly being up to date on whatever the latest trends are in terms of dealing with, as Katie mentioned, ACEs. Mm-hmm. There's a lot that we keep learning and need to keep doing that and keep helping kids. And again, even if the focus weren't on safety but on learning, we need to be doing that. A student can't learn if they're in pain. Yeah. And so, yeah. This just adds even more emphasis to it, more immediacy to it.
We need more. I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's the reductions in our DHHS services are, we have community concepts, and they work so hard. These folks are working with families. And you can have a family tied with a service provider, and then that service provider's moved to others. So I think we have to be dedicated as communities to wrap our services around these families. It's not just the student, it's their families to support them. So yes, from Augusta to the local, we all have to be discussing how we're going to wrap around services for our families.
Well, we're already late for our first break, so we'll take that break. When we come back, your comments and questions. We're talking about school safety. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Maine Audubon, a community of people who understand that when Maine's wildlife thrives, Maine thrives. Learn more at MaineAudubon.org. And the Maine Association of Nonprofits, uniting and strengthening the nonprofit sector through management training and advocacy. NonprofitMaine.org.
About 80% of white evangelicals voted for President Trump, causing some to ask what's become of their faith.
There's a self-perception that they are a persecuted minority and they need the defense of a strong man. And that put them at a place where they were vulnerable to a message that says, you are on the cultural outs.
Evangelicals in the Age of Trump, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear All Things Considered every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. The public is invited to attend any open meeting of Maine Public's Governing Board and Advisory Committee's meetings. For more information regarding specific dates, times, and locations of Maine Public's open meetings, visit our website, mainepublic.org, or call Audience Services at 1-800-884-1717.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Security in Our Schools. With me in the studio, Katie Grondin, who's superintendent for the Auburn School Department, Al Giusto, school resource officer at South Portland High School, and Grace Levitt, who's vice president of the Maine Education Association and a teacher at Greeley High School. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Before we go to the call, so I want to follow up on what we were talking about before the break. And Al, during the break, you were saying that the social workers are the critical link, and that at South Portland High School, there are five.
Yes, we have one that's like the social worker in place like me that works with crisis at the moment, sees people, and then three others that have a caseload, and then a suites of social worker also as well that has a caseload in the school. And they're on the, definitely on the front lines. And I work so closely with them, assessing kids if they're in trouble, if they're going to harm themselves or something. We have a very open working relationship, which is important. So we work together very well on that. And without them, I don't know how the school would function.
And Grace, are there social workers in every high school in Maine?
No, there are not. There are lots of districts that have none. And I just feel really fortunate that we have them in our district. And it's a I've been teaching a long time. It's a fairly recent addition. If you look at how long I've been teaching, it feels recent. But and the numbers have grown. We used to have one quite a few years ago, and now I believe we have seven in our district. But there are so many districts that do not have access to those services at all. And it's really a disservice to the students. We need to be doing more.
Joining me on the line now, Scott Durst. He's a security specialist with a long career in law enforcement. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you, Jennifer, for having me.
So from your experience, what are your top suggestions for what schools can do to beef up security?
Well, listening to the South Portland officer as well, I mean, there's only some certain things you can do, but I noticed looking at from Columbine right here to Parkland, it's me. I don't know if there's ways of hardening up the schools, and I don't mean by, you know, maybe a one entry point, more people that needs to check in. I think that's almost, you know, probably can't do it with a lot of kids coming in all the time. But talking to some other guys was more of better communication between not only the students, their teachers, the administration, the resource officer, and local law enforcement. I think that is probably what I've seen the biggest breakdown in most of these shootings. And Parkland is a perfect example of how a lot of that fell through the cracks. I think if, and here's the issue that sometimes we've had with local police departments and either state or federal, they don't really talk to each other. And I believe the FBI that got the tip that this guy wanted to be a professional school shooter never got down to the local level. So I think kids nowadays who are protesting this are really going to have to take a big responsibility on themselves to be able to communicate what they're seeing, what they're hearing from their fellow students. Even if this kid was outside the school, they all knew that this guy had a problem. It didn't get to the proper people. He was visited like 20-some times by local law enforcement. FBI got a tip that he was posting. None of that got to anyone who needed to know that to start making the first attempt to stop this from happening. And I think that's the biggest change that needs to be happen is that direct communication. And then these other things can fall into place. The officers that were outside didn't know really what was happening on inside. So one item would be just adding more cameras that are directly connected to local law enforcement. And I'll just, you know, leave you with that. Local law enforcement are the ones that are going to have to be responding. And if their resource officer is tied up with something, they're not seeing what's happening inside. More cameras, direct links to the outside would allow those officers who are responding to know exactly what's going on.
Interesting.
And be able to respond effectively. So,
yeah, I know that cameras, Scott, or I mean, excuse me, Al, are commonplace in high schools in other parts of the country.
Yeah, it's hitting on his topic, cameras that go back to dispatch so they can view it and then tell the officers what's going on. Preferably lockdown doors electronically that lock the shooter out of areas once you go into a lockdown. A system that is cell phone based that any teacher can, or worker can put the school into a lockdown. If most things aren't shootings, most events are disorderly conduct from parents between kids, but it could create, like someone comes into the main office upset at a principal or wants to see a teacher or their wife or husband works there and they're now coming there like other workplace violence. So it's not just the active shooter. Someone can easily hit with, instead of a big button, can hit their cell phone, put the school into a lockdown, notify police, dispatch now looking at cameras, doors locked the person away. So they have a certain area. So there's a lot of things like that that could help.
Scott,
with that.
Scott Durst, thanks so much for calling in and joining the conversation. Scott's a security specialist whose background is in law enforcement. We're gonna go ahead.
I can add is schools. The area superintendents, we talked about the active shooter drills, and we have participated that, and other school departments have been asking what have people been doing for active shooter drills. So we have done that to make sure we all know our emergency action plans, who's the command center. So our, and I'm sure across the state, our SROs are invaluable and around communication and finding out information. But also the chief.
When you say SRO, you mean
school resource officer, which is Alice. And but working hand in hand with the police department is key. And we have been practicing that, you know, like the superintendent being downtown and they're in their command center with one of my administrators in the command center. We're all keeping track of what's going on is something we practice.
So Auburn has a school resource officer in SRO.
We have three.
Three. Grace, how many school districts in Maine do not have a?
Well, I just asked Al the question before we started to see if he knew. He felt like most high schools have them, but I don't believe every district has one. I know for sure that not every district has one, and certainly there's not one in every building. If there is one, it may be for the whole district, and that could be quite an area to cover.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to go to Robert, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for doing this program and to your guests, too. One of the guests mentioned that students have a responsibility to report, the fellow students that are being odd and potentially violent. Look, adults have a responsibility, and that's what the students are marching about, asking the adults to protect them. We in Maine have to take some responsibility. The sportsmen's groups around the country stand with the NRA, solid and lockstep, and they resist any common sense gun control, let alone banning military assault rifles, which no civilian should own. So our own Sportsman Alliance of Maine has to step up and stop hiding behind the skirts and supporting the NRA and support our children. Put our children first. I support the Second Amendment.
Okay, Robert, I think that you speak for many people when you call in. A lot of people agree with you, including many of the students who are walking out. We'll move on to Liz, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Liz. Go ahead.
Hi. I am a parent in Portland, and I'm also a public health consultant. And I'm calling because I wanted to just point out the University of Virginia has put out a call to action to prevent gun violence, and it includes many of the things that you've been talking about. But I wanted to point out one of their measures that they highlight is this reform of school discipline policies and to move from being, suspending and expelling students to really bringing them in and using restorative practices. And many schools are doing that, but they haven't yet changed their policies to reflect what they're doing. And so I think that's just an important additional thing that will keep schools safer is if they change those policies and bring kids in and reconnect them.
Sure, Liz. And all three
we would agree with you.
Panelists were nodding at that. But this is a tricky one, isn't it, Al? Because you've got a child who, as you said, at South Portland High School, issued a very serious threat. I'm not sure I have the different instances straight, but in your case, there was a picture of a gun on the internet, correct?
Not on that one.
That was another school district.
Yes, that was a different school district.
A lot of parents in the school will say, I don't want this kid in school with mine. Yet on the other hand, all these studies show that expelling a kid is maybe the worst thing you can do. How do we balance that?
I totally agree with the restorative practices. And that's what, there are psychologists in every school district that do their test, or you have Sweetser that does the exams on kids. And you have to then go that route and figure out, is the kid a threat or not to the school? So that's the mental health component of it that's gone from, school to officer, back to school to mental health. When it comes to just like a basic fight between two kids, unless the kids are a threat to the school, they shouldn't be suspended. They should be restorative, in-school suspension with some kind of restorative program and working that, whatever they did, so they could face what they did, how they affected other people in the school, as opposed to keeping a kid home is like a vacation, and it doesn't do anything for them.
Well, and Liz says that school districts need to change their policies. Grace, what do we know? Are most school districts still suspending and expelling kids?
I believe that is still happening. I don't think I hear of many students being expelled at all. Certainly still some may be suspended in some districts, but I know that that's under review in just about every place I've talked to. We're having lots of trainings. MEA offers trainings on restorative practices as well, because it certainly is a better way to go in terms of students getting what they need.
I totally agree with restorative justice. We need to do more work with that in Auburn. And we do try to review what is in the best interest of the student in response to the action. And there's a balance of, does the student need a break? Does the school community need a break? How do you offer students plans? How can you make changes? I often talk about lessons learned. We did partner with our police department to offer a suspension, an in-school suspension off-site where they are able to do their work, but talk about what happened, how's that going to be working? Because we talked a lot about, and this came up with the Parkland, is what are those re-entry plans when a student does something that other students have feared, whether it's a fight or it might be anything, an altercation, and now that student is reentering, and how do we support that student reentering in a way that's productive and helping the staff and students reconnect with that student. So it's not just, well, we're doing a punishment and that's the end. It's really working on how do we help that student take their lessons learned so that they can be more productive and positive being in the school setting. So there's a lot of facets to this, and there's balanced approaches, and we do. We need to work on what's the cause. Kids don't do things for no reason. There's often a reason, and we need to get to know the students and what may be that pain inside or something that we're not even aware of, and getting them telling their stories.
Liz, thank you for your call. We do have to take another quick break. Before we do so, a word about tomorrow's show. Author Doug Rooks joins us to discuss his book about the history of the Democratic Party in Maine. It's a brand new book. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Faderly Law, dedicated to providing effective counsel on all matters of land use and real estate in Maine. Learn more at FaderlyLawMaine.com. And Dean's Sweets, specializing in hand-dipped nut-free chocolates in Portland's Old Port and at DeansSweets.com. Maine Public Radio would like to remind all teachers and educators that there's a valuable educational resource you may be interested in. Our PBS Learning Media Service contains extensive digital and classroom-ready resources. This free K-12 educational resource is aligned with Common Core and national standards. PBS Learning Media, online at mainepublic.org. We hope you'll stay with us after Maine Calling for the Commonwealth Club of California. On today's show, U.S. Representative Adam Schiff from California. He's the ranking Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, and he talks about America's most important foreign policy issues. That's coming up in about 20 minutes at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, how Maine schools are trying to address security issues. With me today, Al Giusto, who's school resource officer at South Portland High School. Grace Levitt is vice president of the Maine Education Association. And Katie Grondin is the superintendent of the Auburn School Department. Our conversation can be joined at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. And I can tell you all already, there's not going to be any way to get to all the emails and phone calls and Facebook posts. So if you're not able to get through, not able to get your comment read on the air, I'm going to encourage people to go to our Facebook page and continue the conversation there, because this show is only an hour. We're going to go to an email. This is a question from an educator. There is a student at my school who has stalked other students, uses social media to say that certain students should die, and other threatening behaviors. Multiple students have expressed concerns about him in the last 2 years, but this student has an IEP and cannot be expelled because of that. There's pretty much nothing that can be done. So everyone says look for signs, but even when there are signs, there's still not much that can be done. What can a school do if a student has shown signs but has an IEP? How can a school protect his or her educational rights while also protecting the rights of all the other students in the school to feel safe?
Well, that's certainly a tough one. I would assume that there's something in that IEP that would provide for counseling types of services as well, and provide some sort of measures and helping that student learn that those behaviors are inappropriate, and try to get to, as Katie mentioned earlier too, what's behind this. And yes, that student has rights, and so do the other students have rights to safety. But we need to be sure that we are doing the best we can, or better with providing that student with some pretty serious needs.
And just to be clear, students with IEPs can be expelled. They need to be educated as well. So if a student, for a special ed student, there are many facets to looking at what's the best programming. It may be an out-of-district placement. It might be a different type of school that could better meet the student's need. I mean, we don't know the case, obviously. But students with IEPs have to have a functional assessment if there was consideration, is a disability connected to the behavior? And then with the expulsion, there's a plan in place. So it may be that they're being educated in a different environment. And then they have to be also go through the school committee and what are we going to use as our measurements of when this student is safe to be back in school. So I just want to make sure people understand. Okay.
And I've worked with the social workers as well and spoken to kids that have IEPs and tried to guide and advise on their behavior along with their parents. But if they do something illegal as well and people are in fear, and then it could be terrorizing. And they could get a summons as well. So usually it's a counseling thing beforehand. And then if the behavior continues and we can't fix it and someone's actually legitimately scared, then that could be a violation of law, depending on the specifics.
We'll go to David, who's calling from Otisfield. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for having me. One thing that's kind of concerned me listening to people talk about policy is that it doesn't feel to me like there's been really a sober cost-benefit look at the policies that we're considering. You know, like how common are these kinds of events, and what kind of absolute, you know, risk reduction are we actually looking at for these various strategies? You know, like lockdown drills and metal detectors, those kinds of things. And and how do you compare these things to the money and the time that these things cost, in addition to just the anxiety that these things generate? Because, you know, I have friends that are teachers, and I hear them talking, you know, like, when I became a teacher, I didn't sign up to be in the defense business. These policies often enforce the feeling that these things are right at your doorstep. But, you know, how are we taking seriously the rarity of these events and comparing those things to the costs?
Well, I think your active shooter is a rare event, but your disorderly things that happen in the school are not rare events. So when people think that they only need to prevent active shooting, that is not correct. You need to secure your schools for everything that's going on. Like I said earlier, disorderly parent, disorderly kid, somebody coming that has protection orders against, very could be a father or mother against a kid trying to get the kid out of school, or workplace violence, someone in a relationship with that. That all falls into it. An active shooter is just part of that.
And I'm not sure that I'd agree with these being rare. I mean, it depends on what you're comparing it to, but depending upon what statistics you're looking at a couple of hundred of shootings in the last however many years. And if that happens to be in your school and those are your students and your staff, those are your kids, that's no one would call that rare.
No.
So I understand the significance of the cost of some things, but at what point do we say this is safety is just at any cost, really, we need to keep safe.
David, thanks for your call. We're going to move on to Bar Harbor and JR. Hi, JR. Go ahead.
Hi, JR Crivens here. My background is I'm a physician. I was actually the medical officer in charge of the hospital in Bethel, Alaska, at the time of our school shooting with multiple victims. I had the experience of supervising physicians who were taking care of victims and not knowing if their kid was the next one coming to roll in the door because they had kids at the high school. The issue is that it's very difficult to do school safety. We talk about the issues related to disorderly, et cetera, when kids have guns and unhappy parents have guns and unhappy spouses of teachers have guns and they're bringing them in, and you don't know if they're bringing them in and how lethal they are. That's the problem. You can't, there's no second chance when a gun's involved. We need to have strong gun control in this country. All firearms transferred should be registered. When I moved down to Maine and stopped hunting, I took my guns to a gun dealer, sold them to the gun dealer. He can sell them properly. There should be no unregistered transitions. Nobody should have armor-piercing bullets. Nobody should have high-capacity magazines. They should be bought back or confiscated. We need to not kid ourselves. As someone who works with law enforcement officers on a regular basis in the ERs and in the parks, they are in danger because people are carrying weapons that are designed to kill them even through their bulletproof vests. Oh, and waiting periods are essential. And basically, the key thing is all guns should be done through gun dealers. I'm sorry if I stumble, but this is bringing back some tough times.
Oh, well, JR, definitely. Thank you for calling in, and I can't even imagine.
Nope.
Thank you. We'll move on to Bath and Chris. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
So, former principal in a little town of Freeport, And I would just echo that the teamwork between public safety and school folks, whether they're teachers or social workers, I think that's a real key to creating that culture of caring in the school. I'd add that that same goal needs to go for the community. You know, a school exists in a community, and that can sometimes be a challenge. But it just occurred to me that that should be pushed further. And we're talking about a national problem. So we've got the nation as a community. Following that, just kind of by logic, you know, federal resources perhaps have to come into play here. I think there's been an estimate that to put a SRO in each school in the country is between $3 and $5 billion. On a national level, we spend $3 to $5 billion pretty quickly on lots of other things. So there's that piece, and then there's also, I agree with the caller from Alaska, comprehensive higher requirements for obtaining, owning guns, and, you know, I think a ban on assault-style weapons doesn't impinge on our right to bear some arms.
Well, Chris, thank you for your call. Again, a lot of people agree with you. I want to go to an email from Mary. I'm wondering if any schools are looking at ways of preventing troubled kids from falling through the cracks. For example, making every child feel included, creating an ethic among students of kindness toward those who may be outcast and systems of help when trouble is brewing. So we've already talked about encouraging kids to come forward and report when they're worried. But Mary's talking about a climate of compassion.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a couple things that it was interesting that she says that, because secretary said to me yesterday that she had heard of, you know, instead of a walk out, perhaps a walk up. And I hadn't heard that yet. And I said, well, tell me more. And she said, well, how about encouraging every student? What the movement was, is encourage every student to walk up and say hello to a student they might not know, which is kind of interesting. And there was a move around Valentine's, or the care month, around saying hello, that a couple of our schools participate in, which is reaching out and saying hello, being friendly, which I thought was a great idea. We started this year, in many schools in Maine have freshman teams where they're moving into high school and creating that team approach so that they don't feel like they're in this big school and don't have the support, because we know freshman failure is an area that we need to work with. And many of those students start disengaged at young age. I mean, many students we know from kindergarten that have been struggling throughout their school career. So putting those things that work to create those positive school cultures are imperative.
And absolutely. Here's an email from Karen. I'm a high school teacher and have worked in a school that had a natural helpers program. Mm-hmm. This program offers training to high school students to pick up on red flags among fellow students, whether it be drug or alcohol consumption, depression, or concerns about safety, and report it to an adult for intervention. It's about getting help to students rather than a discipline problem. My experience with this program has been positive, and it might be good to expand this to become the norm in schools rather than the exception.
Mm, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you, Karen, for that email. We're going to go to Steve calling from Portland. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I was born in 1964, and I grew up in a pretty large suburban city. And when I went to school, there was absolutely no such thing as school shootings, even though there was much, much less gun control than we have now, and guns were much easier to acquire and much easier to own. Now we have more gun control. We have the Brady Bill, and we have background checks, and we have waiting periods, and yet now we have school shootings.
Steve, thanks for your call. We're almost at the end of the hour. I'm going to let Al respond, and you would say there have always been school shootings. The difference now, I'm going to guess, is the type of weapons that are used, right?
That is correct. If you look up just school shootings, you'll either come to a Wikipedia page. I know that's not always accurate, but this one is, and then a school shooting page, and you will see that there was one person killed or two people injured. Numbers are very low. And even I grew up I was born in 1969, so I never really heard of school shootings. It's because it never made it in the paper. I saw that at least every month there was school shootings. So each year there was definitely at least 12, 15, 16 from the 60s to 70s, 80s, and it increased, but you never heard about them. Now you hear about them more because there's more numbers. You didn't probably hear about the school shooting. There's been three major ones this year, but do we know of all of them? I mean, so far this year, there was ones with low numbers. You don't hear about them as much. So it's when the numbers now it's easier with the internet to find these things. So the higher capacity magazines and the weapons getting access to have increased the casualties. So I think we're hearing that a bit more. We didn't hear about a knifing that happened not too long ago because you don't have as many people, unfortunately, dead. That's what makes the paper.
Steve, thanks for your call. And we're almost out of time, but Al, I want to ask each of you, on the state level, is there more we can be doing?
I think it's interesting, the three of us here represent three different aspects of school. So their day, my day when I go to school, my job is to think about threat assessments and violence. That's what I do every single day. Even though it might not be happening, I think about it. Is that secure? Can that person access here? That's my job. Then I go to the superintendent, the chief of police. Hey, there's a weakness here. We need to do that. The superintendent's job, that's not their job. They have to then organize all that. It is, but it's not on a daily basis. They got budgets, teachers, classes, you know, doing that. So on a state level, we should have more. We have fire codes, fireproof material, but we don't have a threat assessment code. So I think on a state or a national level, we could do more to secure our schools monetarily, whether it's officers and physical things to keep the classroom safe and people safe within the school as well.
Grace and Katie, briefly, is there anything else you'd like to see on the state level?
I would just like to see that the emphasis can be that teachers will be allowed to teach and not have to take on something like being armed and to keep the focus on our students, because that's where it needs to be, to be caring about our students.
And I would add communication. Back to that communication is, I think we need to be careful not to do knee-jerk reactions to things and really be thoughtful and bring people together, the experts together, to really talk about what's going to make the difference. Not just, oh, armed teachers, that's going to make a difference. Put this, you know, we have to really talk about what is the root cause of what's going on and really look at our experts to say, what are the things we can do to make a difference with the lives of our students, our lives of our family, and the lives of our community? And we have to come together and have that conversation.
Well, that's going to be our last word today. Thank you, all of you. That was Katie Grondin, Superintendent of Schools for the Auburn School Department. Grace Levitt is here, Vice President of the Maine Education Association and a Spanish teacher at Greeley High School. And Al Giusto is School Resource Officer with the South Portland Police Department, based at South Portland High School. Roddy Nickbor ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our archives, at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and by Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, a look at the history of the Democratic Party in Maine. There's a new book. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.